Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Cacera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Cacera.
Welcome in, Joe Cacera with Real Estate Radio Live. Thank you for those that are following us on Facebook. We appreciate that very much. We try to stay fairly consistent with the shows if we can. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right around 3 o'clock, 3:30 Pacific Standard Time. For the benefit of those that are following us on Facebook. This is a podcast, and so if you haven't downloaded the podcast, if you're watching the show or you have not done so, you can go to RE Radio Live, or you go anywhere on the internet and just enter in Real Estate Radio Live, download the podcast. That way you can listen to it at your convenience when it's good for you. Timing-wise, just a quick reminder, the focus of the show 8 years ago, hard to believe now, 8 years ago I started this, live radio show, now podcast, continues to grow. We get upwards of 10, 11,000 downloads a month. We want to continue to grow that, obviously, for the right reason. Is that education information. So we want to try to educate as many people as we can in different aspects of real estate. However, recently, in the last year or so, we have kind of opened the box, if you will, a little bit, thought out of the box. We're bringing some new shows on. Jack began last year. We started the series on starting something new in Silicon Valley, and now we're doing the second phase of that, which is growing your business. So we're going to talk about that today. But a lot of different shows which have an aspect to interest in the Silicon Valley. And I would say that this is a big interest in Silicon Valley, right? I mean, any listeners, regardless, everybody wants to know what's going on. And this has been a really valuable, interesting show. I got a lot of good feedback, and we hope that we can continue to grow. It's been good.
I think that I've learned a lot, even though obviously we've done a lot to create the show and to build it, but you learn a lot along the way because wherever you go, you start to talk to people about how do you think about Silicon Valley. I was teaching some classes in the European Union, and I'm visiting lots of startups and lots of growing companies and lots of even investors there, and they're like, you know, Silicon Valley's got something special that we're trying to reproduce in Germany, in Austria, in Italy, in France, and they can't quite get the mix right. They're saying maybe if Google or Apple did something, like they want to believe it's just one or two things, but as we know, it's an agglomeration of many, many things that make this place special, not just geographically, but also culturally.
Yeah.
And it's really about risk and risk-taking and not being destroyed by failure.
Yeah.
People can fail, and often you'll see some interesting people fail repeatedly, and they just get back up on the plate and take for the next pitch and swing for the grand slam and swing for the fences, so even if they struck out many times before.
So I know it's probably more complicated, Jack, but we were just at a talk the other night with the venture capital, one of the famous venture capital guys in the Bay Area.
Yep.
But what is it about, in general, you know, Google's, they're building Google City downtown San Jose. They bought up all the property, Facebook, LinkedIn. Yes. I could go on and on.
Yes.
Why not build a Google City in Germany, or why not build it in Austin, Texas, or in Boston? Why here? Why do they continue to compound here?
I think here you have the greatest density. As I've said, I have some good friends, smart, really smart good friends, who literally intentionally use Uber Pool to meet people in an Uber ride from Palo Alto to, say, San Jose. And that's a slower ride because they're going to pick up people along the way. But they have a captive audience to sort of just ask them questions. What are you doing? What's going on? You get a lot of information. I think there's something about the density of information and the molecules of interaction that's very hard to duplicate. You could say, well, any big city has that. Well, New York City doesn't have
Yeah, right.
It's a big city, but it's slanted in a different way. You might say it's slanted more towards the big-time investment culture.
Right.
You know, you might say Chicago is more like the commodities culture. There's certain regions that take on certain reputations as a result of getting to a certain level of density of knowledge, of interaction, Silicon Valley was probably the earliest to get to this innovation culture
mm-hmm.
where failure was not destroying. You didn't get destroyed by failure. A bankruptcy mm-hmm. was not, you're done forever, don't ever set foot in this town again. Elon Musk could do crazy things and fail and mm-hmm. then still do this car company, Tesla, which might fail, but man, if it fails, you can't say he didn't try really hard to make it succeed. Or this other one, the boring company, where they're mm-hmm. boring holes, you know, B-O-R-I-N-G,
right.
meaning boring down mm-hmm. into the earth. That is unheard of, yet he is pulling off, and we go back to him because of Steve Jobs died mm-hmm. too young. If he were alive, I'm sure we would see a different culture of Apple than what's unfolding at Apple right now, not to be a criticism, but Apple seems to be more of a fast follower. Right mm-hmm. now, they don't look like they're the ones that are heading up the whole 5G area.
It's true.
It looks
true.
Like they're waiting to see how mm-hmm. 5G does. If I were Apple and I've got, you know, billions of dollars in the bank, I just put two
You're looking
feet.
At 6G.
I mean, I exactly.
right, right?
I would say, yeah. man, I'm going to have the first 5G
right.
Apple 12. Well,
right.
what happened to Apple 11? Nah, Apple 11 will be right. under 4G, but Apple 12 will
right.
be a 5G phone or maybe a 6G phone. And I would be trying to use those billions to say, we're going to really be on the bleeding mm-hmm. edge. But they seem to be, no, we're going to wait, you know, and supposedly.
It's a good point. They're really not the aggressor like they were with Steve Jobs,
and
are they?
I think yeah. Jobs was more willing and more interested
right.
in, let's take a whack at something, because even if we fail, we're going to learn
more
a lot.
More of a futuristic view.
Yeah, more
right?
of a view of,
right.
you know, look. People were attracted to Jobs just the same way they're attracted to Musk. His personality brings out
mm-hmm.
this notion of, if I just get to spend 5 minutes with this person, I'm going to be transformed.
Mm-hmm.
So people would flock to him, many with crazy ideas, but
right.
some of them had brilliant ideas,
yeah.
which, of course, like an artist, he didn't mind copying.
Right.
I mean, if he was being truthful, and I think he would be, he would say, yeah, you know, this iPhone was kind of a copy of the mm-hmm. iPod, which itself was a copy of a Rio device that more or less failed, went into mm-hmm. bankruptcy because they were on the bleeding edge. So you could argue they're fast followers,
right.
but they want to project an image like they're the ones that are pioneering.
Yeah. It's an amazing place, and that's the reason we started doing this show. It is really remarkable of what's going on here in Silicon Valley, and sometimes we get a little bit either jaded by it or we don't quite understand it. Jack, you just made a point about traveling abroad. You hear it more and more. I mean, people look at this as interest. It's amazing what the history books will write eventually.
The history books are being written
yeah.
even now.
Right.
And I think there is an aura of perfection that we all know doesn't exist
right.
because we still have homeless. We still have
right.
huge traffic problems.
Housing problems.
I
yeah.
mean, even our airports are frankly not
yeah.
as good as some of the airports you visit in the EU. Even our airports could really use major infrastructure
mm-hmm.
improvements. The fact that in, say, if you land in Munich, which is obviously a very big city
mm-hmm.
in Germany, the fact that you can get on a train and take you to a, you know, Salzburg in Austria in an hour,
mm.
which is
right from the airport.
Right from the airport.
Right.
Like literally.
That's a great design.
It would be the equivalent
yeah.
of me getting into SFO
okay.
and saying, okay, I want to go to Los Angeles. Well, it's first of all, you're not going to
yeah,
take
right.
one train.
Right.
Yeah. Second of all, well, if you really do the scheduling, do you really want an 18-hour ride between?
Right. Right.
Well, you really want to take another flight. See, Europe, I think, did the right thing. Even though there's still a lot of flights between different cities, they really have more of a culture of, we should supply the community
mm-hmm.
with faster transit.
Mm-hmm.
And the cities have these trams, these sort of, you know, rail cars that go all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's smart because I think it does reduce
it's
congestion.
It's kind of funny. It makes me think about what we were talking about before. What comes first, right?
Right.
And it's almost like, what comes first, the infrastructure or the growth?
It goes hand in hand, and I think there is a general view that you do get to a certain number. If you don't get above, I think the latest statistic I saw is if you don't get above 50,000
mm-hmm.
in a population, you don't get enough activity to really turn it into a really interesting place.
Mm.
So whenever you visit an interesting place, it probably is going to have a population above 50,000. If it's under 50,000, it probably never gets to a boiling point.
Right.
It becomes like a sleepy suburb,
yeah.
something like that.
Yep. All right. Well, we're going to, this is a lot of interesting stuff. So we're going to kind of piggyback and continue on the theme of the seven essences, right?
The seven sort of success factors that go into how you grow a business. We did the seven that deal with starting it last year. Now we're doing the seven that aid the growth. And I'll just checklist them off because what we're discussing today, and in particular this last couple of shows, is what comes first, customers or financing? Mm-hmm. You know, of course you have to have a team. It's very hard to be a one-man band. Some people can accomplish that, but few can. The team has to have a technology in mind that is, you know, pretty laser light focused because it's hard to do everything. And then this question of, do you go get customers that prove out the technology, or do you go get financing, or do you go get both? Mm-hmm. And so there's a close horse race between three and four and what comes first. And then when you get to five, which is scaling, how do you make the business really take off? How do you add the gasoline once the fire is really going? And then how do you start anticipating the barriers to entry? And that's six. And then seven is competition. And these things all play together. So we're right at this third and fourth essence or success factor, which is, well, what's your bias? Is your bias to find customers first and then try to grow revenue from customers? Or do you find financing, or do you try to do both? And last week we had on a very great guest, which is Russ Irwin, who both has been an entrepreneur, has been with big companies, and grew his own venture capital firm. And he talked about some of these subjects, and he talked about, you know, how do VCs look at a business? They want to know that there's something there. And I thought today we should talk a little bit about, well, banks, too, want your business, particularly if there's cash coming in, and particularly if they could kind of run the checking account so the cash is running through their system. And as I said to you today when we talked about doing the show, I got a solicitation. I, of course, hadn't opened my mail for a long time because I was in the EU for the last couple of weeks. We actually did that show last week while I was in Austria, and you had a nice setup so we could do it all sort of with modern technology. And at the end of the day, I said, I opened my mail, and one of the items in my mail is, would you like a $50,000 line of credit from this, you know, major bank? Because we want to help you grow your business.
You know, I think there's certainly, if you have cash flow, that's a great option. But when you think about it, since we're talking about these finance, I mean, there's many, many companies or even a certain, you could get these business lines or even credit cards that'll give you $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 lines. Of course, the rates are going to be a little bit higher.
Sure. The typical startup that really got people to believe you were all in is when you said, look, I have every credit card I've taken and put in $200,000 from five different credit cards, including your spouse's credit cards. She's not too happy, or he's not too happy about that. But we're all in, and we've got relatives and friends and family. They're all in, too. And, man, we live and breathe this business.
Right.
Every moment of the day, day and night, we want to make it successful. I mean, that's a very compelling story when a client comes in and says, we want help growing. By the way, let us tell you how we've self-financed this and how we've started to get some customers and how we want to leverage that for whatever the next step will be. That's a very compelling story when people are all in. And you see it a lot of different ways, because I'm sure in the real estate business you see people who say, I'd like to get a second trust deed on a house. Now, I don't personally recommend it because I think the home is kind of sacred, and we start to intermix the home.
You're talking about a primary residence.
Residence. I tend to be a little more reluctant when someone comes in, and I've had this happen where
they leverage.
You know, they leverage, and they've got a lot of equity in the house, so you can't fight the argument that, look, we've had this house for... You know, the last person I recently saw on this, they said, I've had this house for 20 years. I paid off most of the first. There's like $2.5 million of equity. Why shouldn't I get a $1 million second trustee line of credit and start using that money? Why shouldn't I do that? And, you know, it's there. There's value. If I go and I go to a venture capitalist, I'm going to be diluted. I'm going to have to maybe report to the man. You know, the man is sort of the venture capitalist. I want to do it my way. And, yeah, I guess I'll report to the bank. Of course, the bank makes it pretty seamless to automate the payments, so it's not like right. you're really reporting to mm-hmm. anyone. And it's hard to argue, but I can tell you that lots of people worry that when you start to borrow heavily against your own residence, mm-hmm. you are really going all in mm-hmm. ways that sometimes might destroy a family or a marriage right. if right. things really go badly.
Right.
Now, if you've got a backup plan for refinancing it and eventually getting it paid down, mm-hmm. or you have other resources, if you're going to come into some big inheritance mm-hmm. and you're just waiting for that to close out, or some other investment's right. going to close. So there's always different considerations. I'm not going to say absolutely no,
right.
but I know I tell this story often about a family I represented that was amazingly successful in business, but the business hit some hard times, and they had a lot of their personal real estate wrapped up into a business line of credit. And, when the bank got rapacious, as sometimes banks do, it was tied, and we ended up in some massive litigation that, of course, ultimately we were able to successfully resolve, but you don't want to have to go through a couple of years of litigation with the bank
right.
because, believe
right.
me, banks know how to use the legal system
right.
and they know exactly, what they're doing when they decide to take on a fight. So I like
right.
to, if you can, keep a firewall between your home and your business, that's great. Obviously, sometimes it doesn't make sense and it's a lower mm-hmm. cost of capital. But if you talk to most financial planners, the very first thing they'll tell you, which is probably the opposite of the mm-hmm. way we act
right.
in business, they'll say, you want to make an investment? Why don't you pay off your first mortgage? Your
right.
first mortgage. Forget about a second
right.
mortgage.
Right.
Pay off your first mortgage. You're like, why? It's 4.5% interest.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, but think about it. That's like a 4.5% return on
mm-hmm.
your cash. And you're thinking, no, you've done the calculation wrong. What about taxes?
Yeah,
what about this?
Right.
And they're like, no. You should be really conservative. Now, obviously, when you get in your 70s, I think that's probably the right
sure,
advice.
Sure, right.
But, when you're a young person trying to start your own business, maybe in your 20s or 30s, mm-hmm. leverage properly used
I agree.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
And, Mr. Trump is right that, if the more leverage you have, in some ways, the more power you have over the banks.
Yeah.
Because they have to make sure that you stay committed to the project.
That's true.
Because they know that it can become difficult.
Yeah.
So this idea of financing alternatives and looking at what you
right.
have is not a bad thing to
no.
look at least to understand what you have.
No, I think it's great. Banks are a source. We talked about credit cards. There's even these factoring companies. I mean, we could go on and on about a lot of different companies that will take a bit of a risk, whether it's a bank, a venture capital. I guess there's all these degrees, right?
That's right.
They'll take these degrees of risk. Some are, interest rate risk-bearing. Others are equity.
Right.
There's all kinds of different
right.
options.
And let's just go over
yeah.
kind of the detailed version of it. When you get a venture capitalist involved, typically after you've gotten some angel
mm-hmm.
investment, typically after you've gotten some seed investment,
right.
these days it's more like when you get to the Series A preferred stock investment. When the venture capitalist comes in with typically a pretty big chunk of money these days, they don't do these small deals anymore. We used to think a reasonably sized deal was $5 or $10 million. Now it's like 25
yeah,
million, take
yeah.
50. Like, wow, this sounds like a much later stage. But their view is, if they like you and they think you've proven the concept, throw a lot of gasoline on the fire. But once you do that, the other things that fall into place that you don't realize if you haven't been in this business
mm-hmm.
long enough, as I and have for more than going on 40 years, and you have now for a while, is that the banks, like the commercial banks, know that there's sort of a deep pocket at the table.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, you want a line of credit behind that?
Yeah, right.
We'll give you the line of credit. So if you only raise $25 million, I mean, it's a big number, but it's not a
right.
big number for VCs anymore. The commercial bank will say, we'll give you another $15 million as a line of credit because we know the VCs are going to make sure
mm-hmm.
we get paid because we have priority ahead of them in the stack, in this stack. Now, the other thing to know is the commercial banks are followed by these folks that are called venture lenders.
Mm.
And the venture lenders will come in and say, what equipment do you have that the bank hasn't
right.
taken security
right.
on? we'll give you a venture loan where you give us a little bit of stock in the form of a warrant. We'll give you even more credit that you can go behind the bank. We'll be behind the bank, but ahead of the venture capitalists, ahead of the preferred stock. So we're doing this venture debt. So you'll get all these people that'll say, oh, you got this great VC firm backing you, like Andreessen Horowitz. You know, they're out there campaigning for early stage. I'm not really sure they do early stage. They probably tell me I'm wrong, but early stage in my mind is way earlier than when the valuations justify a $25 million investment. Usually in the garage stage is really super early stage. I don't think they do that. Now maybe someone will call in and say, no, you're wrong, they do that. But the reality is once you get one of those major players, a lot of stuff falls in behind. But of course, you as the founder are going to be diluted. And so where you might have had, even after all the initial friends and family, 85% or 90% of the business, it's going to get sliced down. And you're going to get down to close to losing control. And that's a big fulcrum point, because once you lose control, you might lose the business. And your vision may not play out. And that's a sad story, but it does happen here. So juggling how you deal with debt, where you keep control, but you manage the debt, versus take on equity investors like VCs, where they're going to get a bigger voting right. They're going to be on the board. They're going to be hopefully partnering with you, not bossing you around, although sometimes it probably feels like they're bossing you around. And you got to juggle that and decide when's the right time. I typically say to my clients, try to wait until the first slice in the Series A only takes out 10 or 15%. That is, if you're raising $15 million, get to a pre-money value of 85 so that that 15% is after it closes, you have a $100 million company. Now, you got to make some big sales and show some decent growth to get to that number. But it's not impractical, and it does happen every day of the week. It's how a lot of these companies do so well. They scale the business without losing control, and they really do it in a smart way.
There's all kinds of different ways to structure this financing. That's why we want to talk about it and bring it up. There's the many different ways we're talking about right now. I mean, it's I guess what's coming to me, Jack, is that the bank, I guess it's just at what stage, right? And this is where some of the advisors comes in, or other people on the board or partners or whatever, making these decisions. Like, what's the best decision for your company at that given time?
It's always a review of a lot of factors. I mean, there's no perfect cookie-cutter formula. There's no big spreadsheet in the sky that you say, well, if I plug in, I have this many employees, and I have this many customers, and I have this. I mean, there are models, but nothing is going to be better than getting in front of a group of interested board members that have a stake and that understand that dilution and the fact that the pie is growing, but you know, their slice percentage-wise is going down, but the pie is getting bigger, that they've got skin in the game, so they understand the choices. Okay, if we go with debt, it's this. If we go with equity, it's that. If we go with a mix of debt and equity, it's this.
So could I guess it just depends on each company's different, right? So if a venture capital or someone's looking at seed or A or something like that, and they're already carrying a couple hundred thousand dollars in debt, could that be looked at as a negative, or could that be looked at as, hey, you know, they made a creative attempt here to get where they are today?
If the debt has generated value.
Value and income.
If the debt
or
was
revenue.
Like the stupidest examples I've seen is, oh, well, we incurred the debt because we hired the wrong CEO, and then the CEO churned out, and we did this crazy contract with the CEO.
Comp plan and all that.
He got he or she got a golden parachute, and we had to go into debt. Oh, man, that is the worst, because what that says is you not only didn't get that person, you might have created a competitor, because he may go off or she may go off and now start your worst nightmare, and you had to pay them? For the exit, I mean, that becomes almost an embarrassing story. And so this notion of picking the team, making sure you're adding to the team correctly, making sure you're focusing laser-like very laser light. You know, the light has to be very sharp, like a laser beam.
Laser beam
light on the technology area, so it's not so broad, not so narrow, really spot on. And how you get to that spot on place is itself a different story, but one that's worth repeating, which is the team really has to have a sense for the problem that's being solved and what the customer will pay for versus what the customer just says, I can get this from Google.
Yeah,
I don't need this. What do I need that for? Like, duh, I'm not going to pay for that. I get it for free.
Yeah.
You know, why should I do that? It's a free available thing. I don't need to pay you for it. You have to be aware of that. You have to be very savvy to that. And then you have to understand, what will the customers pay? How do you price it? How do you price it in a way that makes customers want to use it and repeat using it?
Right.
So it's not churned out. And then the money should follow.
Yeah.
And then with the money following, the financing should follow. I think a lot of problems that I see are often teams with technology that say, if we just get the financing, we know this will work and we know we'll get customers. And I often say to them, you got to get in front of a few customers to even understand
have
if you're on the right track.
Yeah. Traction or even acceptability, right? You may not have revenue, but maybe you have customers saying, yeah, we like this. Let's give it a try or something.
I see so many versions of, we're putting AI into, just fill in the blank.
Fill in the blank.
Everything.
Right.
We're putting AI into blank.
Right.
We're putting AI into your diet. We're putting AI into your restaurant choice. We're putting AI into your vitamin supplements. And I say, how do you know people want that?
Right.
Oh,
right.
They obviously want that. I said, what do you mean they obviously want that? How can you say they obviously want that? And then I say, well, if it's so obvious, the recent one I saw is we're putting AI into the mix of marijuana-based, you know, essentially now there's a whole line of
food
that's getting marijuana
edibles.
In it. And I'd say, well, how do you know whether it's targeted at millennials, Gen Zs, older people that have pain?
Right.
I said, do you have any idea? Because it might just be one segment first. No. We just know everyone will love it.
And there's even formulations for animals now
Exactly.
Here, right?
Exactly. No, CBD-like products for animals is a big deal.
Right.
And animals, who's that company, Chewy, that just went public? That's a multi-billion-dollar valuation.
Amazing.
I mean, you know, we laugh at this stuff.
I know.
But you know, at some level, there are lots of markets that exist that have to be discovered.
Yeah, right.
And only once you discover, wait, there's a market there. Wow, we had no idea, but there was a real market there.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to be going out there, knocking on doors and talking to people.
Right.
Or if you have the budget for doing it, or you have the time, or you can finagle it somehow with friends and family, getting focus groups together and realizing there's a lot of data that's extracted, even from a 15 or 20 person focus group where you bring in some Subway sandwiches and offer a free lunch. You're going to get a few homeless people that'll show up because they're going to respond to an ad. But you're going to find.
Well, that may not be so bad either.
You're going to find out a lot.
I'll tell you what, there's a lot of those homeless, not to get off topic, there's a lot of those homeless people are very close to, I mean, they're right on the edge that had a job years ago or 6 months ago and they couldn't take it anymore.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. That's all interesting. So focus groups are obviously good. We have just a couple minutes left here. So alternative financing for growing your company. Again, you have the traditional kind of venture debt. We talked about bank, you know, get loans, credit cards, additional. What other means, I guess, can you think of? Or does that pretty much cover the different ways to...
Well, friends and family are where people go first.
Right.
And if you can't get friends or family, you probably don't have a good enough idea. Because a lot of friends and family are, frankly, wanting to help and are salivating at, wow, I'm getting into something that's really at an early stage.
And they've known you for a while.
And they trust you. The speed of trust is there. And, you know, they might force you to do some things like change the packaging, or I don't like this, or I don't like that. And you have to be open to ideas, but you know, you have to also moderate it because it's your vision.
Right.
But traditionally, you want to get enough commitment, because part of getting the commitment early on is it sends a signal to the next round of investors that you're serious and that you've even brought people into the deal that are going to hold you accountable.
Right.
So that it acts as kind of a safety net that you're not going to lose. You're really committed to this. I mean, in an oddball way, you know, Tesla did this great incentive, $100 million incentive program to Elon Musk to keep him committed. I'm not sure that that's as effective as what he brought to the table 10 or 12 years ago when he joined the original founders.
Yeah,
it was actually a different group of people that founded the company.
I would hate to speak for anyone, but that would seem like a guy that is not motivated by money.
It's not about money. It's not about money.
No, not those
exactly.
guys.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly. So they put together this whole plan that's tied to this. I happened to read the whole prospectus because I was interested in seeing how do you put something together with someone who doesn't need money.
Yeah.
Well, make it even more money. I'm thinking, no, that was probably not the right way to go. Maybe there was some other incentive that would work for him. And I only raise these issues because whenever I see a founder who's also now moving one foot into, like, you know, a space company, SpaceX, or underground to boring, you start to think, you know, they probably have run their course at whatever that startup is. And maybe that's it. Tesla, I'm sure, will go down.
Yeah,
he may be
a little bored at Tesla, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a function of,
gosh,
you know, you have to keep someone like that very much in the interest of defining the future. So when they came out and announced that truck, which I don't know if it's really going to come out or not, and I'm not talking about the pickup truck. I'm talking about the semi-trailer, you know, the tractor-trailer.
Right.
I think that was a big statement about the future of trucking, which probably got him really super excited.
Yeah.
Now, whether you can pull that off or not, maybe a whole other question.
They got the money to do it.
Right.
All right. Well, before you go, remind everybody where they could reach you, Jack, in the area of expertise for your firm.
Sure. So we like to say at Computer Law Group that we help teams and founders and groups kind of get out of the garage and move to the next step in their business for both intellectual property planning as well as strategy for growing the business. So we've started this series and covered last year starting something. Now we're doing a new series and I'm writing a new book about growing something. And the goal is to really help those teams. So I'm Jay Russo, J-R-U-S-S-O, at computerlaw.com. That's all one word, computerlaw.com. We have offices in Palo Alto and San Francisco. I can be reached. We have an old-fashioned phone. I was talking to someone today. Still AT&T for many years. We're probably like one of their oldest customers in Palo Alto. It's 650-327-9800. And then my direct line is the one that I use that reached me directly is my cell phone, which is 650-444-2240. But, of course, no one really uses the phone anymore, even though I still use
it. True.
But it's jrusso@computerlaw.com, and happy to take questions about this show and other shows and people who have downloaded the book, which is available on Kindle. We give the book to people that have questions, and they send in questions, and they want to know, well, what about this and what about that? And then they get the book and say, oh, man, I should have read the book. I say, great.
So, yeah, so if someone has an idea or they've started a business, they need the formation of a business, all that, they could contact you
for
any of those reasons.
That's and in Germany and Austria and France and Italy, I meet clients all the time that want to come to the U.S. with an innovation that they've already established, and they've got a nice footprint in the EU, and they're like, help us figure out how we get footprint in the U.S.
We need to get one of them when they come and visit
we need to
get them on
show. In fact, one of them is going to visit from the UK, and I've been thinking
that would be great.
Try to get him on the show because he did a great job in the UK and expanding from the UK into the EU pre-Brexit. I don't know if he'd be as easily accomplished now post-Brexit, but he's accomplished it pre-Brexit. And now he's thinking, and I think he's already put a flag down in the U.S. And interestingly, he's like, do I put the flag in Silicon Valley or is it too crowded? And we've had that discussion because he's like, well, maybe I should put the flag down in, you know, a place like Detroit, because Detroit is a little underwater right now, and you can get real estate at a very low price and even maybe tie it into an economic opportunity zone investment. You know, there's all sorts of ways to mix and match
these
ideas.
You know, again, we started the show this way, and well, maybe we should end it this way, is you have, I would say you have this unbelievable amount of brain power, let's call it, or whatever you want to call
intelligence.
Intelligence, right?
Yeah.
And that has to be the draw. So you could start as a company, you could start looking at this cheap real estate and tax benefits to go to Detroit or North Carolina or something.
Yes.
But are you going to draw the people there?
That's right.
Right. That's the kind of the...
That's right. That's the issue. And
right.
are you going to draw the people that understand intelligence augmented, right. IA, may be more powerful than AI, even though both work together. Mm-hmm. Because when you put a human at a problem where they can use technology mm-hmm. to amplify their own human intelligence, you have what I'm calling these days a form of computational intelligence that's bigger than just AI.
Yeah.
It's actually the future. The future is knowledge workers will do things that amplify their own intelligence
right.
with technology in a way that makes the job easier and lets us all get on to more sophisticated problems.
Right.
And that notion is much more acceptable here in Silicon Valley mm-hmm. than in any other place around the U.S. or in any place in Europe where people still worry, well, what about jobs? What mm-hmm. self-driving cars? Gosh, are you people crazy in Silicon
yeah.
Valley? Self-driving cars? Where are all the workers going to go? Self-driving trucks? Where are all the workers? And then they look at you like, you know, trade union-style Europeans, like, that's crazy. You're going to put so many people out of work.
So wait,
go bankrupt.
You, so wait, I'm waiting for the self-driving car,
yes.
delivery car.
Yes.
And then for a robot to jump out
yes.
with the meal.
That's
right?
going to happen.
And then bring
That's
going to
happen. And the robot will even eat it for you and say, it was really good. I want to save you the calories.
I'm waiting for that.
I'm waiting for the version, Joe, where they just like deliver a puff of smoke that uh-huh. you just inhale, and they're like, man, that tasted so
wow,
great. No calories. Isn't that a great
wow,
idea?
I love that
idea.
I mean,
idea. It's like
wow.
the future form of nutrition. All those vitamins were delivered.
So they could deliver
vapor.
They could deliver marijuana that
well,
way,
Well,
right?
I think they're doing that. I think that's already happening. It is. It's already happening.
All right. Good show. Right. Thanks again,
Thanks,
Jack.
Joe. You're welcome.
This is Joe Couture of the Real Estate Radio Live. Thanks again for tuning in. For more information, always go to reradiolive.com, or you can download the podcast anywhere. Take care. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at reradiolive.com.